become unmanageable. So Deborah, we're looking forward to listening to you.
Well, hi everybody. My name's Deborah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Deborah.
And I have a new last initial. It's E. E for Edgar. That was nice. Nice. You know what? There have been some amazing blessings for me during this pandemic. That being primary one, getting married, age 61 for the first time ever. I guess you could say I had problems with commitments before that, you know. I don't know, something like that. Anyway, and I do love Zoom, so I'm glad you're all here, whether you're on Zoom or in person. So anyway, step one is where we're going to start today. And I had my last drink April 3rd, 1987. And I came to AA at the suggestion of a therapist who I only met her for like 5 minutes, and she asked me, that was the first thing she asked me, if I thought I had a problem with alcohol. Wonder why she said that. It was pretty obvious. And I knew a guy that was in AA, and he took me to my first meeting. And the reason, oh my goodness, I just felt like everything was spinning out of control. Especially when I drank. I noticed this about myself. When I drank, a lot of times bad things would happen. A lot of times. And most of the bad things that happened when I was drinking. And, you know, the consequences kept getting greater and greater. I've wrecked a few cars, and that's what happened the night of my last drink, getting into my car in a blackout, leaving the road, and, unbelievably grateful that no one else was killed or injured in that incident. So I found myself, I knew in my heart and in my gut, I said, this is it. I got to make a change. Now, mind you, I wasn't ready. I wasn't thinking I was an alcoholic. I don't know what I thought I was. I just knew I was hurting. And I went to the therapist. She asked me the famous question. And I contacted my friend Dan. And he took me to my first AA meeting. Now, this is my experience with the steps. And with the first step, I'll never forget it. I was at this meeting on a Friday night, and I heard the reading of the first step. We were admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And to me, in my brain, I said, oh my God, that's it. That is it. Never heard it put quite like that before, you know. And for me, the powerlessness over alcohol had to do with, you know, once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And, of course, the mental obsession, which I didn't even know I had, that was, that actually caused me to drink against my will. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced that, whereby I would say, I'm not going to drink today, or I'm not going to drink tonight, and then, boom, after work that night, I would be at the liquor store or the bar or the whatever, buying alcohol and getting loaded. So unmanageability, heck yeah, man. Every, you know, the drinking was out of control. And you know, there's a double-edged sword with that because I applied that obviously to drinking. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because of a drinking problem. You know, so when I read the first step, I heard it. I identified immediately with the drinking and the powerlessness and unmanageability. And that first meeting really had me interested, and of course the people there were so kind and genuine. So I knew I was going to go to more AA meetings, not necessarily that I was an alcoholic, but I could relate to step one. The other thing I picked up on almost, I think that first meeting, I believe it's the third tradition, which states the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So nobody was asking me to, you know, to make that commitment to being an alcoholic, and I was grateful for that too. So anyway, it's I say all of these things because for me, I didn't. The first step was the answer to what I thought. I didn't know there was an answer to. I had no way to. I had no words to describe what was happening to me with the drinking. You know what I mean? And so when I heard that, I thought it applied. And I thought, well, you know, other than the drinking, I'm doing pretty good, you know. You know, just get rid of the drinking, I'll be okay. And you know, eventually what ended up happening is that this friend of mine, Dan, he became my first sponsor. And I got sober in Pittsburgh. I moved up here 6 years ago. So my experience, most of my experience in sobriety and AA was in Pittsburgh. And so the thing was, don't drink and go to meetings. And I started going to meetings. And ultimately, my friend Dan had said to me, look, you know, why don't you give it 90 days and see what you think? You know, if you want to stick around or not. And so I did that. I went to meetings just about every day. And at the end of the 90 days, I knew I didn't want to go back out to what was I left behind. And I identified myself as an alcoholic. Powerless over alcohol. Life was unmanageable. I don't recall, you know, it's so funny how it's starting to, all of that's starting to get a little hazy for me now. I don't remember some of the details that I used to, but and what I mean by that is I can't remember the exact sequence of this, every little thing, but I don't remember exact, I mean, right after step one is step two. And we're not going to talk about step two tonight, except to say this. You know, the first night, my first meeting, my friend Dan bought me a big book. And I took it home, and I read it. I just couldn't get enough of it. I read it and read it and read it. And interesting thing, you know, from the beginning, this was the message I received. You know, I guess, you know, I really had concerns about God. I don't know when I expressed that, but I'm sure it had to have been in the beginning because I was the overwhelming majority of people I heard Nobody told me that God is essential to AA, that this is a spiritual program, and that God is the answer to the spiritual malady that is alcoholism. That was not the message. The message for me was, that I heard, was repeated over and over again, was, don't worry about that. You don't have to believe in God to do this, to get this program. Now, when I was a younger woman, I used to have a strong belief. But I bring all of this up because in the very beginning of our book, right after Bill's story, in the second chapter, there is a solution. Talking about, I love this, nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. And I would dare say that everybody here has recovered as well from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. Nobody here is suffering from the condition of drinking. And so for me, what I did not know is that, did you ever hear this in a meeting, that alcohol is but a symptom of the disease of alcoholism? I thought, yeah. What does that mean? In my head, I was, what does that mean? Symptom of our, it's a symptom. Well, what that means to me is that, you know, the state I remember being in as a young woman and a child was a state of being ill at ease, or I had disease. And alcohol, drinking alcohol, took that away just so fast. And so, you know, because I thought this program was all about drinking and not drinking and all this other stuff, and I was told I didn't really have to worry about God or anything else, I wasn't really prepared for the fact that once the alcohol is removed, you know, the disease of alcoholism is right there. And that's what we work on with the remainder of the 12 steps. And I guess I missed it, or I didn't understand it or whatever, but for me, the 12 steps, I was pretty much, like I said, in schooled in the don't drink and go to meetings thing. And so I just want to say to you this. There were a lot of people in my life in those early years, and I guess God wasn't cool. I don't know. I don't recall even talking to people who were promoting God at meetings, or the fact is that this is a spiritual program, and. I have something I want to read out of the big book, but I have a confession to make. I do love meetings on Zoom, and I've gotten hooked up with this guy in Miami. His name is Russell S. And I was listening to his leads a lot online. And, you know, he's very open about the fact he's a lawyer, this, that, and blah, blah, blah. And so I sent him an email and stuff, and you know, we chat online usually a little bit, not a lot, but he really just, for me, in the last year, helped me to really put together a lot of things that still didn't quite connect in my sobriety. And so I know that there's a lot of things that I'm going to say here over the next couple of weeks that are things that he has said. He is a wonderful mentor to a lot of people, but he doesn't sponsor women or anything like that. He's just a really good, solid, strong AA. And I don't know if you have Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. People don't often reference it. Russell does. And so I have the book. It's kind of, in the beginning, it's kind of hard to get started. It's like the Bible with all the begins and the begats and the all that other kind of stuff. But if you skip ahead, you just kind of move up a little bit. It gets really a little more interesting, I think, where they're talking about the first group forming in Akron on page 91. Chapter 8, all the way into chapter 8. And so, like I'm saying to you, you know, step one to me, from day one, powerless over alcohol. Life was unmanageable. Alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. That's what it meant to me. That was it. Yet, the founders, they said, Dr. Bob, noting that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to much of anything, said they were convinced that the answer to their problems was in the good book, meaning the Bible. To some of us older ones, the parts we found absolutely essential were the Sermon on the Mount, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. Now, when I came into AA, they did talk about the Sermon on the Mount. It was a book I bought. I couldn't read it. I don't know why I couldn't read it. I just couldn't understand it, or I don't know. But so in the very beginning of AA, they were using the Bible as their book because there was no big book. And interestingly enough, in the same chapter on page 101, the reading is, on the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bob E., who came into AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power that would return you to sanity. This is not at all what happened in my case. In certain part, I think in Cleveland and in Akron, you had that was your key to get into an AA meeting. You couldn't just go to AA. You couldn't just go and check it out to see if it's for you. You had to convince the members there that you were, you know, you had to convince them that you were serious, go through the surrender, and then you could come to an AA meeting. To me, you know, so I just wonder for me how much different. I think it would have been unbelievably different. I know it would have. Because in step one, what I later found out, I stayed sober on 17 years on my own power, really. Meaning that I really didn't have a strong faith in God. And I found myself at 17 years, I was homicidal, suicidal, like Ed was talking about last week. And I got hooked up with this, you know, I called the central office in San Antonio, where I was on business, and I got connected with a woman. Her name is Yolanda, and we just celebrated a meeting with her for her 30th AA birthday, 32nd, a couple weeks ago. But anyway, that was, she of course asked me about God. And, you know, I told her that I didn't really have a connection with God, and I thought I'm agnostic. I had come to the conclusion that I was agnostic. And so I bring this up again regarding powerlessness, meaning I have no power. So, you know, she brought it down to lack of power being my dilemma. And talked to me about, asked me if I believed in the energy, you know, of the sun, the power, the energy that is contained within the sun and electricity. And I mean, it was that, that's really how, where I started with some sort of an understanding of a higher power. You know, when I first came in, I tried going back to church and it didn't resonate with me. And so the powerlessness to me is the gateway to finding power, which is what the remaining steps are really all about. In the big book, under There is a Solution, they write, "The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves." That's pretty clear cut, central fact of our lives. I read that paragraph, I read this chapter, you know, thousands of times, I'm sure. I don't know what went on in my brain to go from central fact to saying, I'm agnostic, you know, but that's what happened to me. Or that was my experience, I should say. That was my experience in the beginning with the steps. They go on to say, "If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution." And, you know, I wanted, now I was desperate to stop drinking, really, when I first came to AA, and I stayed that way the whole entire time. There's never been a time when I just don't want to go back to drinking. That has been one of the most, that's been the most important thing. And it's interesting because the program, certainly in Pittsburgh, in Erie, I can't really, I think there is a greater presence of God in the meetings here. But Bill Wilson talks about emotional sobriety. And meaning that, you know, alcoholics, that we have unhealthy dependencies. Once the drink is put down, the drink is just the beginning. There's the money, you know, the food, the sex, the relationship, the whatever, the on and on and on. You know, I want it all. And I didn't know. So I say all of this because, you know, my sobriety date is April 3rd, 1987. 17 years later is when I hit an emotional bottom. The bottom fell out there. Because I didn't have power. And I was trying to manage everything myself. My, you know, the worldly clamors had taken over. The job, the this, the that, you know, everything. And so it was interesting for me at that time at 17 years, I started over at step one with my new friend Yolanda in San Antonio. And she opened a whole new, you know, it was a whole new experience for me with bringing God in. I have to say, you know, despite of all the things I, besides the things I said about having, you know, being agnostic and things, I know that in AA, in the beginning, I was told, hit your knees in the morning and ask God to help keep you sober. Get on your knees at night and thank Him that you got through that day. And I did that religiously every day. And you know what? It worked. It worked, everybody. In spite of me, it worked. And so I'm here to say this, that, you know, for the first 17 years of my sobriety, I was certainly involved in the spirit of the fellowship, as opposed to the fellowship of the spirit. And it's a whole different kind of sobriety. Once I found some power, and that is my experience with step one in a nutshell. I don't want to start repeating myself. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Oh, I'm doing good, Kevin.
So now we have time to open this up for questions and answers. We can take questions either here in person or over Zoom. So if you're here in the room, please raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. If you're on Zoom, you know what to do. Just speak up, I guess. Who wants to start us off?
Thanks for sharing with us.
Hi, Dana.
Made so much sense, all of it. And I particularly liked the part where back in the early days you had to convince a group that you belonged.
Yeah.
And today it seems like you have to convince yourself and others that you don't have a problem. You know, it's just ironic, the change.
Yeah.
But once, like you explained, once you admit that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life had become unmanageable, the rest of it falls in order and becomes a lot easier. You have to be open-minded. And it's been a long time since I've seen you. Congratulations on your recent marriage. And thank you very much for coming out and sharing with us.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Any other questions for Deborah?
Dave's our alcoholic.
Yes.
Hi, Dave.
Nancy, thank you. I don't know if you can hear us.
Hi, Deborah. Brenda, alcoholic.
Hold on, Brenda.
Go ahead.
David, sir.
Dave, go ahead.
Hold, sell him. Whoops. Where are you?
Okay, we'll give it a try. I'm out in outer space here somewhere. It's interesting you tell the story about sort of doing it on your own for a period of time and not finding that higher power. But I recall when I went to a rehab spot, and they gave us a book and they said read the first five chapters. So I read those, but I didn't read chapter four. The reason I didn't read chapter four is because I wasn't an agnostic, you see, in my mind. And it wasn't until somewhat quite later in my Sharian sobriety that I ran into some tapes from a fellow by the name of Sandy Beach, and they were just absolutely wonderful. I'm sure you've perhaps heard one or two of his, but his favorite chapter was chapter four, so I thought, well, I'll give that a try. And then when I took a look at it, I said, oh, I have a choice, don't I? And I just wondered if you finally got to chapter four, as did I, after a period of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the craziness of the difference between the message in the book and the fellowship of AA couldn't be more stark, because as I told you, the things I heard from the fellowship were, oh, don't worry about it, God's not that important, you know, blah blah blah. But in the chapter of the agnostic or to the agnostic, Dr. Bob says, you know, if any form of intellectual pride or, you know, anything like that prevents you from being receptive to God, then I feel sorry for you. So the founders, both Bob and Bill, and the early members were all, they were all deeply religious. And they were, and as I said, you had to, in the beginning, surrender to this power and admit your powerlessness. And I mean, there's a story in here about a guy who was, you know, fairly young. His name was Clarence. I think he was like alcoholics number 4 or 5. I don't know, but Dr. Bob, you know, looking at him and saying, "Oh, you're rather young. Have you? I'm not sure you've hit your bottom yet." And Clarence said, "Oh, I don't have any clothes. I don't have anywhere to live. I don't have a wife. I mean, I don't know how much more of a bottom I could have." And Dr. Bob asked him, you know, "Do you believe in God?" "Oh, I guess so." And Dr. Bob's reaction went, "You better. That is, because without God, you are not going to make it." And so, for me, when I read the chapter to the agnostic, Mr. Zern, I'm sorry it took me a long time to get back to that, but it says all of that in chapter 4, too, that, you know, God is the answer. Looking for your answer in the material world, in the clamors, worldly clamors, is not the answer. And yet somehow, in my brain, I had it all turned around. I read this book multiple times, yet it still didn't dawn on me that this is what it was saying. Because the fellowship was so different. And I guess, what do you call it? Denial, stupidity, you know, both. But anyway, the chapter of the agnostics is an excellent chapter. And I thought it was a chapter that was designed to tell agnostics, to give them hope. And that's not it at all. It's a chapter that say, hey, if you're agnostic, you better get over it. <You know? laughs> And so, I mean, I was so full of self-will, and I was a very willful person, and you know, whatever, that I just had it all twisted up. Thank you.
Hi, Deborah, friend alcoholic.
Hi, Brenda.
Your experience back in 87, were there, you said Dan was your sponsor, was there a shortage of women back there in AA, and did you find that relevant in you getting sober?
No. In 1987, there were a lot of, you know, there are a lot of women. Here's another thing, you know, it talks about, you know, we get into the fourth step, fear of people. Now, I did not think I had any fear of people. I thought I was, that was not a thing for me, but it turns out I did. You know, I was afraid to ask a woman to be my sponsor, and Dan said yes, and so, I mean, it was the easier, softer way for me. And he helped me a lot. I can't say enough about that. But you know, when I came into AA, I'm like most of the women I've talked to. I was not interested in hooking up with another woman for anything. You know, I wasn't. And so my friend Dan, somebody I already knew and liked and had somewhat of a relationship with. I mean, it was just, it was easy. And, you know, that's a lot of, you know, I find alcoholics like easy. And so that's why. Mm-hmm.
go ahead and get Jack here in the room.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, yes, we can elicit. Okay, you're going to go first? Okay.
I just have a short question. Early in sobriety, when you got the cravings really bad for alcohol, what did you do?
Here's the most amazing thing. I did not get them. I mean, honest to goodness, I did not. Well, here's what I did. I guess I, well, maybe I did get them. I didn't think I did. But here's what I know. It's like that interview we watched on a rerun of Johnny Carson last night. Oh, my God, it was so funny. Anyway, no, I did. I guess I never thought, oh my God, I want to go drink. But I remember on Friday nights that that was a rough night for me. I would be driving home, you know, on Allegheny River Boulevard in traffic, and I would be really anxious about wanting to drink. Now, maybe that was a craving. I don't know. It might have been. But a couple things happened. You know, I loved Hungry, Angry, Lonely, Tired. I did not even recognize when I was hungry. And a lot of times I was. Lonely and tired. I mean, alcoholism is a lonely disease, I believe, and it was for me. And so that's the closest thing I guess I had. I didn't have strong crave. I'm so grateful. It felt to me like the obsession to drink was lifted immediately. Friday nights, like I said, were difficult. My first home group was a Friday night meeting. There was a beginner's meeting at 7 and a speaker at 8:30. And I did that for many years. And that got me through the Friday night thing. And then what I do too, because I like to drink on Saturday morning, I go to the Saturday morning Amberson meeting in Shadyside. And that would get me off, that would just be the thing I needed to get me through the weekend. Because that was a tough time for me. Thanks for helping me remember.
Thank you.
Hi, Deborah. I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jack.
Thanks for speaking to us tonight. It's delightful. So, drawing on your experience that with step one, my question is, what might you say to a newcomer, or maybe someone you're working with, or somebody new about how they might approach step one to avoid some of the challenges that you encountered?
Yeah. Well, I guess I would say this for, if you don't have a sponsor, my recommendation would be to get one, you know, because this can't do, I mean, it's just, this program cannot be done alone, number one. And then number two, I'm trying to remember, you know, I have two ladies here tonight, my two Lindas, I call them. I love them both dearly. And we just went through this not too long ago. And, you know, just looking at examples of, you know, again, drinking against your will. Drinking when you know, didn't want to drink. Drinking just to drink and all the things that happened. I guess you can lead a person down a path. That's what I try to do with this, with my story. I talk about my experience with the people I sponsor. And because, I mean, everything in AA for an alcoholic, you have to come to your own understanding and your own of yourself. And, you know, admit that you're powerless. And actually, it takes me over here to page 30. Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we are alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. And so that's the question I ask the people. Are you willing to concede to your innermost self that you are alcoholic? That's only a question that you can answer for yourself.
Thank you, Deborah. Diane Pearson here. When you talk about step one, where we are powerless and our lives have become unmanageable, you eloquently talked about how your drinking had become unmanageable. What about other aspects of your life? Did you believe that that's part of step one, too? It's not just focused on your alcoholism, but every aspect of your life has become unmanageable?
Well, you know what, Diane? I know that now. But the person I was all those years ago was that I was on the path, I was on a career path. I was on the path of perfectionism. And I thought that was my problem. That was my problem. I drank too much. I got drunk. I fell down. I blacked out. That was my problem. Everything else was fine. And that's why I was saying this before, you know, alcohol is but a symptom of, you know, I didn't really understand what that meant. But I know what it means now because I have, you know what? I have been through the crusher with all these other areas of my life that I was still managing, you know, with work. Why do you think it took me to age 61 to get married for the first time? You know, relationships, you know, everything. And in the Pittsburgh area, overwhelmingly, at the meetings I attended, I went to the East End for most of the meetings. The solution was not God, it was therapy. Everybody was in therapy. And that helped a lot. But I didn't see it. I didn't see it at first. I didn't see it for a long time. So I was stark raving sober. That's what I was for a lot of years in AA. 656.
Anybody here?
Kevin's going to take us out with a famous question.
Oh. I guess that's too close to the speaker. Okay, so my question is just, I would like you to repeat something, because it's what you were, when you were speaking about either something about being in the fellowship and not being in that, whatever you said, it was one of those things that I said, I want to remember that, and I completely can't even ask the question appropriately. So
yeah, it's in a vision for you.
It's in a vision for you, okay. Yeah. And what does it say? Could you say it again?
I believe it's in there. We're talking about being in the fellowship of the Spirit. And for all those years that I was in AA, from the majority of in the beginning, for 17 especially, I was in the spirit of the fellowship.
Versus?
Being in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know, in the beginning, it's no human power, and I was in that kind of fellowship. Yeah.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks so much.
Okay.